All right. Well, good morning, everyone. My name is Gretchen, and I am on staff here at Sycamore Creek, and I'm also excited to be here as a representative of the teaching team as we wrap up this series called Assembly Required. Now, for those of you who have been here throughout this series, who is the main character that we're focusing on during the series? Elijah, that is right. Very good. Okay, so we're talking about Elijah, and today I want to talk a little bit about discouragement. So raise your hand if you've ever felt discouraged. It looks like everybody's raising their hand. If you're not raising your hand, I don't believe you. I think you probably have been discouraged before, because we've all experienced times of discouragement. And as I was thinking a lot about some of those times that I'd experienced discouragement, and there's a lot of them, so I had to really, you know, leaf through some stories in my life. But I thought of one time in particular where I was discouraged, but you would think that it would be a time that held a lot of joy for me. And that was after my daughter was born. So I had wanted to be a mom ever since I was a little girl. I had a baby doll that I named Susie, and I took good care of her as a little girl. My daughter is the same way. She has all these toys, and they're all her kids. I'm always like, ooh, that's a lot of kids, honey. Wow. I don't know how I feel about that, but you know. So I always had this baby that I took care of, and I wanted, even as a young adult, I always wanted to be a mom. And so when my husband Corey and I got married, we decided that we wanted to try right away to have children. And we found out 4 short months after we got married that we were pregnant with Hope. So here's a picture of Hope and I. This is from her 3-month photo shoot that we did. And I chose this picture because I know myself pretty well, and I can tell when I look at this picture that I'm wearing a smile that I put on my face when I don't really feel like smiling. I can recognize that just by looking at that picture. That was 4 years ago, and I know that that's what I'm doing, because during the time after Hope was born, I experienced postpartum depression. And a lot of people experience this. I didn't fully understand it, but I just felt down all the time. And, you know, I would have thought that I would have been filled with joy. I'm holding this bundle of joy in my arms, and she was perfect, and she was everything I ever wanted. I had all the things I ever dreamed about as a young girl, but I was depressed. And it was a hard time. And, you know, parenthood is not easy. I mean, I think that most of the parents in the room would agree that parenthood is not easy. And I've experienced different times of depression in my life. Somebody pointed out to me after the first service that I just posted on Facebook the other day that sometimes I think my child is possessed by the devil. Because she's almost 4, and we're going through some stuff. So you know what? Parenthood is not easy. Here's a picture. Now I have 2 kids. Oh, wait for it. I don't have control, Noah. Thank you. There we go. So I got Hope here, who's almost 4, and CJ's 1.5 years. And, you know, I've experienced some times of discouragement and depression throughout my time as a parent. But I think we've all had moments in our lives where we've felt discouraged. And so I want to talk a little bit about that today. And as you all told me, we've been talking about Elijah throughout this series. So Elijah is the main character, and we're looking at him in a time when Israel had gone through a time of being built up as a nation, and they wanted a king, so they got a king, and then they divided into 2 nations, Israel in the north and Judah in the south, and they both had kings. Now, I got to tell you, the kings they had were not so great. They maybe had 1 or 2, like, okay guys, but mostly the kings they had were not so great as leaders. But they were built up, and they had Ahab as their king in this time when Elijah comes on the scene. And God, we found out last week that God is the master builder, and he is building up faith in this man named Elijah. So this is going to kind of represent building up our faith here. So he sends Elijah to Ahab, and he says to tell Ahab that there's going to be a drought. I tell you what, if you're a leader of a nation, you don't want to hear that there's going to be a drought. That is not a good thing. You're like, how am I going to provide water and food and all these things for my people? So Ahab wasn't too thrilled about that. So then Elijah went into the wilderness after he shared this information, and God provided for him. He provided a babbling brook for water to drink, and he provided ravens that brought him food. And then God said, after the babbling brook had dried up, and after the raven stopped bringing food, God sent him to a place called Zarephath. We heard about that from Aaron a couple weeks ago, that he sent him to a place called Zarephath, and he didn't go to, like, the biggest mansion where, like, the richest person in town was going to feed him, like, just an array of glorious dishes and wonderful things. He sent him to the poorest widow in Zarephath. Now, I don't know about you, if this is Elijah, I would have been like, yeah, okay, God, sure, great idea. But no, Elijah said, I trust you, God. He went to Zarephath. God had built faith in him, and he went to Zarephath, and this woman, she didn't run out of flour, she didn't run out of oil. She was able to provide bread for Elijah and for herself and her son. And so he spent some time with them in Zarephath. Now, after his time in Zarephath, Elijah was come upon this problem that in Israel, they were worshiping false gods, namely Baal. Ahab's wife, Jezebel, brought this worship of Baal and these false gods to Israel. And so Elijah set out to prove that his God was the one true God. Our God is the one true God. So they went up on this mountain, and it was like a smackdown between God and Baal. So we've been doing this Lego theme between these this whole series, and I want to show you what it would have looked like in Legoland when there was this smackdown between God and Baal. All right, here we go.
Hello, sports fans. We're coming to you live from BC Entertainment Studios as we're moments away from the start of the second half of the first and most likely annual God-Off competition. As always, I'm Chris Brickman, joined by my co-host, Mike Technico.
That's right, Chris. Team Baal was talking some pretty tough game this morning before the competition began, but they just couldn't seem to bring the same fuego we've been seeing earlier this season.
One of our sideline reporters caught up with Elijah, captain of the Yahweh team.
Thanks, Chris. So tell me, Elijah, what's going through your head as you prepare for the second half?
Well, my God is real, and theirs is a cow. So, yeah, I'm feeling pretty good.
Any comment on that taunting we heard from your sideline?
Well, I was just giving them some encouragement.
Maybe you should shout louder. Maybe Baal is sleeping, or busy, or traveling.
Well, let's find out if you can put the fire where your moo is. Back to you guys in the studio.
Good try, Aaron. You'll get there.
We'll hand you off to Rod and Mario at the mount after a word from our sponsor.
Wine.
Well, thanks, guys. Hey, if you're just joining us, I'm Rod number 6 Allen.
And I'm Mario Imane out of Birch Bemba. We are moments away from the start of the second half here on the scenic but sticky Mount Carmel.
The 12 stones have been laid, the wood is set, and we're underway with Elijah and Team Yahweh.
You! Dump those jugs of water on the altar!
That's a bold strategy, Rod. Let's see if it pays off for us.
Yahweh! Show these people that you are the true God. May their hearts be turned back to you. Send forth your blazing fire!
Pause for effect.
Whoa!
Mic drop.
Can't believe it! Team Yahweh wins! Team Yahweh wins!
That's more praise. Mm-hmm. Yes, I'll be here all forever.
In all my years of brickcasting, I have never seen anything like this.
Elijah, what are you feeling right now?
King Ahab, you might want to get a fork and a poncho because my God just cooked your bricks. And now he's going to make it rain! Is the true God. Down with Baal and his false prophets.
Down with Baal.
Let's go kill them all.
Okay, and that about wraps it up.
We'll see you next year when the people forget and turn away from Yahweh again. So long and good night.
All right. Well, maybe that's not exactly what it was like in real life, but I hope you enjoyed that video as much as I have, and I've seen it a few times. So, What happens is Elijah proves that God is the one true God. And you know what? I love it. He kind of shows off. He's like, yeah, pour some water on there. Yeah, now do some more. Pour some more water on there. God's still going to light this altar on fire. He's really like showing off. Like, God is awesome. So then, as I told you, Ahab's wife, Jezebel, she's the one who brought these false prophets and these false gods to Israel. So Ahab goes to tell Jezebel what has happened. And here's what happens with that. Now, Ahab told Jezebel everything Elijah had done and how he had killed all the prophets with the sword. So Jezebel sent a messenger to Elijah to say, may the gods deal with me, be it ever so severely, if by this time tomorrow I do not make your life like that of one of them. So she's threatening him. She's like, you killed all my prophets. You proved that my God wasn't a true God. I'm gonna make sure that you die as well. You know, you'd think that Elijah would be feeling really puffed up by this experience. Like, did you see what my God just did? I mean, this is awesome. I've got God on my side. You can try to kill me, but it's not going to work. I have God on my side. Hello. But that's not what happened. So what actually happened is that Elijah was overcome with fear. So even after this time of being built up by God, it's like when we have something that we created with our blocks, and our sibling comes along and says, that's stupid. I'm going to take it apart. And so Elijah gets torn apart. He gets discouraged. He gets broken down by this experience. Even though he had this amazing mountaintop experience, he is discouraged. So that's what I want to look at today. And you know, I love that this story is in the scriptures. And I love it because, not because it's like the most positive story, but I love it because it's real. And you know, it shows that Elijah is a human just like every one of us, that he is experiencing fear and discouragement and depression. And I think that it's in the scriptures for that very reason, that we all experience that, and we need to know that it's okay. So I love that this story is included. And the point that I want you to go home with today is that when you are discouraged, God builds you back up. Will you say that with me? When you are discouraged, God builds you back up. So we can get discouraged by lots of different things. The first thing that we find in the story that Elijah was discouraged by is fear. So after he gets this threat from Jezebel, here's what happens. Elijah was afraid and he ran for his life. He ran for his life. You know, we said, like, we thought he would have felt puffed up and, like, super, super excited and, like, felt like he was almost unstoppable because of what happened on the mountaintop where he proved that God is the true God. But he was afraid. He ran away. You know, sometimes I feel like it would be so much easier to just run away from a problem than actually facing it head on. Like, there's that fight or flight thing. I always feel like flight is the answer. Like, man, if I run away from this, I won't have to deal with it, and it won't hurt, and I can just avoid it. But that's not really the case, is it? It's going to come back to bite you if you try to run away. So, you know, we all have things that we fear. What are some things that you all fear? You want to shout it out? Like, I'm afraid of the dark sometimes. Getting fired, yeah. What else? Heights. My dad is super afraid of heights. Yep. Missing the bus. Silence. I hear you, Marianne. I understand that one. I'm afraid of spiders. Did I hear another one? Falling. I used to have dreams all the time about falling. It's like the weirdest thing. What else? Heights. Yep. Hurting somebody. Is anybody afraid of snakes? Yes. What about mice? I hate mice. We had mice in our old house. Ugh. So we've all got these fears. Well, I wanted to share with you something that I fear. I fear conflict. I hate conflict. It is like, I want to avoid it at all costs. I tend to be a people pleaser, so if anybody was upset with me, that would really bother me. Like, I want everybody to be happy with me all the time, and I always make the right choices. That's just not life, is it? So here at Sycamore Creek, we have a way that we deal with conflict, and that's called the role renegotiation model. So this is important because what we do is, if I were to get upset with somebody, I'd go to that person and we talk about it, and not only are my expectations on the table, but so are theirs. So we'd have to talk about, like, are these expectations fair? Are they reachable? Should we change the expectations? And the goal is that on the other end, we come out as a stronger relationship and we have solved the conflict that happened. Now, I tell you, when I first heard about this model, of course I hated it. I was like, man, I don't want to deal with conflict. Why are you trying to make me deal with conflict? And then the first time I did it, it was like really scary, but it went okay. And the next time I did it, it was still really scary, but it went okay. And I've had a ton of experiences with this model where it's went really well. I actually recently had to role renegotiate some expectations I had of somebody, and they were like, that's totally fair, but I don't think I can meet those. And so we figured out something different that worked better than what I had expected of that person. And so it went really well, but you know what? I still hate conflict. I hate it. I fear it. I don't want to do it. I still want to run away. Even though I've had lots of positive experiences, it makes me nervous. And you know what? I think that fear is this emotion that just like takes us over. It's so powerful. So we can be discouraged when we feel fear, and it just overcomes us. Another thing that Elijah is discouraged by in the story is failure. It says in the story, he himself went on a day's journey into the wilderness. He came to a broom bush, sat down under it, and prayed that he might die. I've had enough, Lord, he said. Take my life. I'm no better than my ancestors. When I was reading that story, I was like, whoa, Elijah. Like, that's intense. Maybe we need to stop being so dramatic. But you know what? He felt like a failure. He was like, I just proved that God is the one true God. And they still want to kill me. Like, come on, God, I'm no better than my ancestors. I've had enough of this. This is hard. He feels broken down. He feels like all the pieces of his faith are taken apart. You know, nobody likes to fail. I don't think that that's possible, that anybody really likes failing. Failing does not feel good, does it? No, and you know, I've heard somebody say that you have to fail 9 times to succeed the 10th time. Well, I call baloney on that. I don't want to fail 9 times. I just want to succeed, okay? Why do I have to fail those 9 times? As I was looking for different quotes and things about failure, I found this quote by Winston Churchill, and I thought it was really useful. It said, success is stumbling from failure to failure with no loss of enthusiasm. Isn't that funny? I never thought about it that way. Success is stumbling from failure to failure with no loss of enthusiasm. And you know what I realized? Failure is science. Okay? Go with me here on this one. So Pastor Mark, who's the campus pastor over at the Potterville Church, he was a scientist before he came and became our pastor, our campus pastor in the Potterville Church. And when you're participating in science, you're doing experiments. With the understanding, now tell me if I'm wrong, any scientists in the room, with the understanding that you're probably going to fail. So you do this experiment, you get it all set up, you try it, and you fail. So then you change one of the factors in the experiment, and you try it again. And you probably fail again. And you do that over and over and over again until you find the right ingredients. So it's all of these different failures over and over until you figure out what works. And I realized exactly what Winston Churchill was saying. You have to have these failed attempts before you can find the right thing, the right ingredients. I love that. You need failure to pave the path to success. But we always want to say, I've had enough, right? How many of you have ever said that to God? I sure have. I've had enough. This is too hard, God. I don't want to do this anymore. You know, I had an experience like that when I was in college. In college, I was a part of this program. I was in the music department, and we had a program where we would form little worship bands, and we would travel around to different churches, and we would lead those churches in worship. And I remember this one time in particular when I came back after an experience of leading worship at a church. where I felt like it was a failure. I thought it didn't go well. I really can't remember why. I don't remember the reason it was that I thought it was so bad. But I remember going to the dean of the School of Music's office. His name was Dr. Wright. And I said, Dr. Wright, I don't know what I'm doing. What am I even doing this for? I've had enough. I'm terrible at this. And I remember really specifically what he said to me, because it stuck with me. And he said to me, what I hear you saying is that you had a bad experience, not that you were not meant for ministry. And I don't think I understood at the time that maybe God had a different ministry in store for me than just leading worship. But that stuck with me, you know? You had a bad experience. You failed at that experiment. And that's okay. So God was starting to build me back up. But we get discouraged by failure. So Elijah's been discouraged by these things. He's been discouraged by fear, and he's been discouraged by failure. And the third thing we see in the story is that he was discouraged by fatigue. He goes and he lays down under the broom bush and he falls asleep. Discouragement is literally exhausting. It is exhausting to be afraid all the time. It's exhausting to fail. He is literally exhausted by this experience of discouragement. You know, we live in a culture that tells us that success is equal to busyness, right? I see some smiles out there. I know who is hearing me when I say this, that we think we can put our schedule so tight that it's scheduled to the minute. And that if we pack it fuller and fuller and fuller, that equals success. But that's just not the case. Packing your schedule that tightly is impossible to maintain. Our bodies were designed to need rest. And so we think that success is this tightly packed schedule, this busy, busy, busy all the time. But that's not the case. Sometimes we're fatigued, we're tired, and we need sleep. We need to take care of our bodies. Have you ever heard somebody say, I can't be sick right now? I say it all the time. I can't be sick right now, right? Because we have our schedules tightly packed. We want to be busy, busy all the time. Well, sometimes when you're sick or you're fatigued, that's your body's way of telling you you're going too far, too fast, for too long, and you need to slow down. So we get discouraged by these things, by fear and failure and fatigue. But do you remember what the point was? When you're discouraged, God builds you back up. Say it with me. When you're discouraged, God builds you back up. So at this point in the message, I'm sure you're thinking like, wow, I'm really tired, I'm really freaked out, and I feel like a failure. Thanks a lot, Gretchen. Way to wrap up this series in a negative way. But God builds you back up. So I want to talk about the ways that God can build you back up. And the first way that God builds you back up is when you take care of yourself. So, you know, we're talking about this fatigue of feeling tired and needing to rest. And God provided that for Elijah. He lay down under the bush and he fell asleep. God said, you need to rest. You're too busy. Take a nap. You know, we talked about how we think that success is measured by this busyness, but God built the need for rest into us as he created us. Sometimes I feel like sleep provides the clarity that we need for whatever we're working on. Whenever I'm working on a message, I tend to think if I stay up late at night and type it all the words exactly the right way, and I'll come up with the perfect illustration that's really going to drive my point home. But it's somewhere around midnight when I'm like, whoa, I need to go to bed. And you know what I find? I find that when I do allow myself the rest that I need, that in the morning, I find clarity. I do come up with that one illustration that was what I was looking for. Or I do come up with the perfect words to describe what I was trying to say. You know, I actually came up with this idea of doing these blocks this morning. Because last night I was staying up late and I wanted to add a little something to my message. And it was when I had rested that I was allowed the clarity that I needed. And you know, God, like I said, he built this need for sleep into us when he created us. when God created the world, he spent 6 days working, and then what did he do on the seventh day? He rested. He didn't say, okay, the world's created, boom, off to the races, let's do this thing. No, he rested. And in the Ten Commandments, there's a commandment that says to keep the Sabbath day holy. That's all about rest. We need to rest. We need to take a day to relax and to reflect. Pastor Tom, who is our lead pastor here at Sycamore Creek, he is on sabbatical right now. He's been at our church for 9 years. He actually said when he came here that he wanted to take a sabbatical after 7 years. And I reminded Jeremy, whoop, we're on year 9. So maybe he stretched it a little too far. But Pastor Tom recognizes the need for rest. During this summer, he's going to experience clarity. He's going to have a time to refresh himself and refresh his relationships. And he's going to have time to reflect on where we've been as a church and where we're headed. So this time of sabbatical is so important. And do you hear that word sabbatical? What word do you hear in there? Sabbath, that's right. So sabbatical is a time of Sabbath, a time to take a break and step back, kind of go in the balcony, so to speak, and look at an overview of where we've been as a church and where we're headed. So this rest is so important. And you know, Elijah rested under a bush. And it says in the scriptures it was a broom bush. Now, a broom bush is called that for a few reasons. It grows over like this, and the end of it, what do you think it looks like? A broom, it does. So that would provide him some shelter. He could lay under the broom bush and receive shelter from the sun. It could provide food. Plants often provide us food. And then they would take the ends of the broom bush, like the twigs, and they'd burn them, and then they'd bury them under a layer of sand. And that way, in the night when it was cold, they could lay on it and it would provide them warmth. So this bush provided the rest that Elijah needed. So God provides tools for us to take care of ourselves throughout Elijah's journey, as well as in this time of discouragement. And that brings me to the next way that God builds us back up. And that's when we surround ourselves. So God builds us up when we surround ourselves with people who are going to be honest with us, people who will help care for us, and people who will help celebrate with us. So in the story, we see that all at once an angel touched him and said, "Get up and eat." And he looked around, and there by his head was some bread baked over hot coals and a jar of water. He ate and drank and then laid down again. The angel of the Lord came back a second time and touched him and said, "Get up and eat, for the journey is too much for you." So he got up and ate and drank. Strengthened by that food, he traveled 40 days and 40 nights until he reached Horeb, the mountain of God. So this angel came along and surrounded Elijah and helped him care for himself. The angel didn't come and tap Elijah and say, "Get up, get over yourself, you're being overdramatic, let's get out of this wilderness, come on." No. He woke him up, he said, "You need to eat." Reminded him that he needed to eat and he needed to drink, and he helped care for him, and he even let him rest a second time. So who has that friend that you need to remind to eat? I called her out earlier that I told her, and she was like, "Yeah, totally." Carola, who was on our staff, I'm often like, "Did you eat today?" And she's like, no. And then she's like, "Oh, I should probably have a snack or something." I'm like, "Yeah." When my husband's the same way, if he's getting a little cranky, I'm like, "Hey, honey, we should stop and you should get a snack." Okay, good plan. So we need to surround ourselves with people who are gonna say those things, be honest to us and say, "I think you need a snack," or, "Hey, maybe you should rest." My mom used to tell me all the time if I was looking for something, she'd say, "You'll find it in the last place you look." And sometimes she would remind me to stop looking, and then when I stopped looking, I would probably find it. So, you know, we need to surround ourselves with those people that are going to help us, be honest with us, and then celebrate with us. When we have joys, we need to celebrate with one another. When we have sorrows, we need to mourn with one another. You know, that's why we do this faith thing in a community. It can be really easy to do it individually and think that we need faith only for ourselves and we don't need to talk to other people. But it's so important to do this in a community, Because it's when you become close to those people. There are people in this room who could say to me, like, man, I really think you need to take a break. And I'd be like, yeah, you're right. You know, there are people in this room who could say to me, like, wow, Gretchen, it's already 1 o'clock. Why didn't you stop for lunch yet? And I would be like, oh, you're right. I should probably stop and have some lunch before I continue working. Because I've developed the relationships in this faith community where people can be honest with me. And that's why we do small groups too. So it's one thing to see some of you just 1 hour every week when we're here in church. But when we're in small groups, we're able to take extra time to develop those relationships, to deepen our relationships to a place where we can be honest with each other, where we can mourn together, where we can celebrate together. So I think that surrounding ourselves with those kinds of people is a way that God can build us back up. The third way that Elijah finds that he can be built back up is when you check yourself. So have you ever heard the saying, check yourself before you wreck yourself? Yeah. So I had never heard it before. I was like, that's weird. Or here's the Yoda way. This is my favorite. Check yourself, you must, before wreck yourself, you do. You know, my brother could do the voice and everything, but I'm not as cool as him, I guess. So, but Elijah had the wrong perspective. So in the story, after the angel woke him up the second time and said, you need to eat for this journey, he goes on a 40-day journey to Mount Horeb, and he's going to meet God there. So Elijah goes on this journey, and he gets up to the mountain, and he's going to meet God. And I can only imagine that Elijah's thinking, I know how God's going to show up. So along comes this mighty wind, and Elijah thinks, oh yeah, God will be in that mighty wind. But God wasn't there. So then, oh, there's an earthquake. Elijah feels an earthquake. And he says, I know, God's going to be in this earthquake. But God wasn't there. So then along comes a mighty roaring fire. And I'm sure Elijah was thinking, I know, God's going to be in that fire. He's led people with pillars of fire and pillars of smoke before. God's going to be in that fire. But he wasn't. God shows up to Elijah in a still small whisper. Let's read. After the fire came a gentle whisper, and when Elijah heard it, he pulled his cloak over his face and went out and stood at the mouth of the cave. Elijah's ashamed. He's like, oh, I didn't have the right perspective. God came in a still small whisper. You know, I think too that Elijah was feeling like, nobody's understands what I'm going through right now. I just proved that God was God, and they still want to kill me. Nobody understands how I feel. And then he thought, he thought God was going to be in the wind, and he thought God was going to be in the earthquake, and God was going to be in the fire. But God came to him in a still, small whisper. And maybe Elijah felt like he was alone. But you know what? He wasn't alone, and neither are you. God was with him the whole time. Have you ever heard that poem, the Footprints poem? I really don't like it. I tend to dislike anything that I think is a cliche, and so to me that poem is a cliche. But I read it again as I was preparing this message, and it took on a whole new meaning. Because the character in this poem says, well, there's only one set of footprints. Why did you leave me, God? Why weren't you with me? But at the end, God says, when you saw only one set of footprints, it was then that I carried you. So Elijah felt alone. He said, why did you leave me, God? I proved that you were God, and now they want to kill me. Where did you go? And God said, I'm in the still small whisper. When you saw only one set of footprints, that was when I carried you. So you have to check your perspective when you're discouraged. God will build you back up when you check your perspective. The last way that God builds you back up is when you engage yourself. So you can't stay in the wilderness forever. Elijah slept. He had his rest. He was surrounded by people who helped take care of him. And he checked his perspective. And then he got back in the game. He didn't stay in the wilderness. Elijah was built up to do the work of God. God created each and every one of us to go and make disciples of all nations. And not just any disciples, disciples who make disciples. But if we don't get back in the game, if we stay in the wilderness when we're discouraged, then we can't do what we're created to do. God didn't build us up for us to do nothing. He didn't build us up so that we could stay in the wilderness and, you know, mourn our own pity and feel bad for ourselves all the time. He built us up so we could get back in the game. It says in Romans, and we know that in all things God works for the good of those who love him, who have been called according to his purpose. For the longest thing, I always thought that it said God works all good things, but that's not what it says. It says God works all things for the good of those who love him. So even when we're discouraged, God can take that discouragement and he can work it for good. You know, when we feel like, I've had enough, Lord, this is too hard, I want to flee rather than fight, I want to, you know, take a nap, I don't want to deal with this anymore, God will build us back up, like we see here. He's going to build us back up so that we can get back in the game and do the things that he needs for us to do. When you're discouraged, God builds you back up. So at the end of the story, Elisha doesn't stay in the wilderness forever. He gets back in the game, he goes out, and he passes on his legacy to somebody else. He passes on all the things that he's learned to somebody else. He doesn't just keep it for himself. He gives that away freely. And that's what we're called to do as well. Will you pray with me? Dear God, thank you so much for the story of Elijah and the way that it helps us to relate to his humanness. I pray that when we're feeling times of discouragement, when we feel fear or fatigue or failure, that you would build us back up, that you would help us to take care of ourselves, that you would help us to surround ourselves with people who are going to be honest with us and help take care of us, that you would help us check our perspective, and that you would help us engage and get back in the game and do the things that you have in mind for us to do. And we pray these things in your name. Amen.